This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. It is Midday Mobile on this Friday, live at Parrish Kubota Tractor here in Robertsdale. And people will be calling in here. Once again, if you call in Parrish Kubota Tractor and you talk to one of the people here at the switchboard, they will you'll give them an email and they'll send you a coupon, $500 off of tractors, skid steers, RTVs, all that. You can use it by, I think, the end of June, but you have to get it today to be able to use it then. So check it out. We'll talk more with Blaine about that coming up a little after 1 o'clock right here on Midday Mobile. Reminder, too, if you've thinking about weekend projects, getting cleaned up, spring cleaning, my man Trey Bennett with 1-800-GOT-JUNK can move that forward quickly. In a logarithmic way, exponential way, he could move forward getting things cleaned up, because it's easier to clean up when you have fewer things. So you got junk in a storage unit you pay on every month. You don't even want the stuff, but you're like, when am I going to go do that? Or you have stuff in your house, or even big items, like the number of storage sheds and backyards and above-ground pools, trampolines, all that kind of stuff they get rid of. They do that every week. So it could be inside your house, outside your house. It could be at your office. Could be at your shop. Could be anywhere you have junk and you need it gone, use 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Easy to make that appointment as well. Online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or just pick up the phone. The name is the number. Call for my buddy Trey at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right. Joining us again here, it is good to talk to AL2 Republican candidate in the runoff, Caroline Dobson. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, and I sent a text to y'all earlier in the week. I was up, I was in Letohatchee, and you and I talk ag stuff a good bit. I was in Letohatchee, and this is interesting because outside of the district, but still support. And by the way, it was auctioned. It was Tuesday. I was there, so there were trucks and trailers. Yeah, there are trucks and trailers from all over. Yeah, it was trucks and trailers from all over. The auction was going on. People coming in from AL2. So pretty good thing. The folks up there had your sign up in the window and your name around the place. So, you're getting some representation up there.
Yes, I'm grateful to say I've been endorsed by Mid-State Stockyards. There are a lot of cattle that come through there, and David and Scott Garrett do a great job. The stockyards in Loosedale are also outside the district, but that's also a phenomenal stockyard, as is Frisco City Stockyard in my home county of Monroe County. Michael Jordan does a fantastic job there. So there are a lot of great stockyards in the South Alabama area. I'm grateful to have grown up going to.
Yeah, I've never been. I owe Frisco City a trip there. I've never been there. We usually use Loosedale. Yeah, but it was
Wednesday.
Good.
Wednesday's the day to go there. So,
hey, and by the way, too, if you can do anything, if elected to represent AL2, can you work on the price of stocker cattle right now, and let's get them down a little bit further?
our herd numbers, our cattle herd numbers in the U.S. are as low as they've been since 1951. So, yes, I will work on that indirectly.
Thank you.
Part of the reason the numbers are so low is because we've got those on the far left that want to do away with the livestock industry entirely. On the basis of the environment, while ignoring the fact that ranchers are, the number one environmentalist. What do you think of grazing lands double as wildlife habitat, watershed? And that's just an example of, just how disillusioned and out of touch the left is.
I want to boil down to come back to more things that are specifically in district, but thinking about Washington right now, and I'm looking at the stories I had worked up for today, and I'm still watching the fact that, Iran has claimed that they are going to, retaliate against Israel. Your perception on this in realpolitik here, I worry about boys and girls from AL2 and AL1 and anywhere in the United States being part of a wider Mideast war, but it seems like it keeps the rheostat gets turned up more and more every day.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, and you can kind of trace it back, and originally to Obama and wanting to try to, negotiate with Iran as if they were, a legitimate sovereign nation that honored civil rights and treated its citizens humanely and didn't sponsor terrorism. So I think that was kind of, in a lot of ways, sort of the start of Iran's rise is just even acknowledge, you know, the Obama administration trying to, you know, treat Iran as if it were, you know, a good actor. Of course, that's been exacerbated by the Biden administration, Biden's weak leadership. Of course, the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan left such a void in the region. And, you know, whereas, I think, prior to Biden taking office, you could still say that the powers in the Middle East were Israel and Saudi Arabia and us. You know, now the power is Iran. And that's been made even worse by the fact that the Biden administration continues to unfreeze funds. You know, just a few weeks after the October 7th attack, the Biden administration unfroze $10 billion worth of assets, you know, claiming that, oh, these can only be used for humanitarian aid. Well, okay, my four-year-old could tell you that money's fungible. Mm-hmm. And if Iran can use $10 billion for humanitarian aid, all of a sudden that means they've got another $10 billion somewhere that they can use to, you know, to fund Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. So, I mean, I think that's directly attributable to the Biden administration. And again, that's why we've got to get President Trump in the White House this fall. We've got to have a strong leader. Look, I don't want to send, you know, our young people over there, but the only way that we can avoid that is to have a leader who's strong, because, you know, with strength, there is deterrence. But right now, you know, again, when our commander in chief is not fit to stand trial, you know, you can't wonder that the evil actors in the world are thinking this is an opportune time to rise up.
Yeah, thinking about those billions of Iranian dollars, they would come in handy back here as the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project has been put on hold now. See what I did there? There's my segue. But looking at this, the federal portion, maybe, I don't know, I mean, if you can answer this, because a lot of people say this, and I can go into the reasons why the 80-20 split inverted from the federal government. You know, it used to be 80% federal, 20% some kind of combination of local, you know, municipal and state. Now it is 80-20 flipped to the benefit of the feds, 20% coming in from the feds. But with the news today of the federal money coming in to rebuild the key bridge there in Baltimore, people are asking me on the text line, and maybe you have an answer on this, why that can be done and it can't be here. And if it's because it's been a disaster, people say, oh, well, all we need is somebody come hit the come hit some section of the bayway, which would be hard to do in a big boat because it's shallow. But, you know, what would you think is appropriate on that project for federal money? Would you push for more federal money for that bridge project?
Yes, at least 80%. I mean, look, it's a federal interstate. This is a federal bridge. I absolutely think our government has a spending problem that we have got to pay attention to. I would have never voted for the spending bill weekend before last. And part of that problem is because we've allowed the Biden administration and Congress to define infrastructure as anything under the sun, you know. But we have got to get back to you know, narrowly defining infrastructure and then funding those essential items of infrastructure. Look, I mean, one of the major tenets of why governments exist is to provide for the national defense and to provide for infrastructure. You know, so and again, this bridge is vital. It is necessary. And the hardworking taxpayers of Mobile and Baldwin County should not have, who use the bridge to get to work, to get their kids to baseball games, to go visit family. Again, it's a federal interstate, and those people should not have to pay tolls 2 and 3 and 4 times a day. You know, that's not the proper allocation of costs. And I will fight to ensure that at least 80% is paid by the federal government.
You said you would have been a no vote on the spending bill, which is, I think, the congressional, you know, the House delegation, all Republicans all voted no. Right. You had a split there between Senator Tuberville voting no. But somebody I know that you look up to, Senator Britt, voting yes on that one. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not here to, you know, to criticize anybody. Senator Britt is a huge role model of mine. I think being the only female Republican senator in Washington with school-age kids, she's also shown that she's one of the hardest working. But, you know, here, again, I would have voted no, because And not only the fact that, you know, it included so much spending for so many unnecessary projects when we're about to go off a financial cliff anyway, but just the sheer fact that, you know, it was dropped, 1,100-page bill dropped with less than 36 hours to review. You know, I'm a lawyer by trade, a real estate lawyer. I'm not a trial lawyer, but what I do daily is review legal documents and review contracts and leases, and I'm pretty efficient at that, pretty quick. There is no way you can get through 1,100-page bill in a day in any meaningful sort of way to unpack all that it contains. So, you know, it is the spending first and foremost, but it's also the procedure and the timeline. You know, that's we've got to have more Republicans who are willing to say, wait a minute, you know, the thing that's keeping inflation high, the fact that we have high interest rates is directly attributable to our overspending. You and I balance our budgets. We need our government to do that too.
Going to the text line here, this texter says, does Ms. Dobson think red or blue states matter with federal funding? I think it does.
Oh, I definitely think so. You know, and look, you know, with respect to spending and priorities, again, we need to be focused on really cutting back on our spending and focusing on infrastructure, on increasing our own, you know, military preparedness, ensuring that our fighting men and women have the equipment that they need, and figuring out a solution to mental health crisis that's impacting our whole country. You know, if I'm in a small town or a large city, mental health, there's not adequate facilities and not an adequate solution for mental health. But yeah, you know, when it comes to, you know, a lot of these blue states, those are the ones that are pushing, you know, for instance, this latest spending bill had, you know, allocated $850,000 for a gay senior citizen center in a blue state. You know, whereas I feel like when you're talking about your red states, you know, what we're asking for is money for a bridge that people use day in, day out. So we have got to cut spending and really focus on limiting our government to those infrastructure items that benefit all the public without a political agenda. You know, if some gay senior citizens want to get together and raise private funds to build a senior citizen building, that's great. We live in a free country, but you know, taxpayer dollars shouldn't be used to fund things with a particular ideological agenda.
Yeah, and this one back to the on the bridge program here. I bet I know the answer, but Steve asked, would she be willing to raise federal gas tax for the bridge?
Look, I have signed a pledge that I will never raise taxes without an equal lowering. I signed the Americans for Tax Reform pledge, stating that I will never raise federal taxes, and I do not think the solution is to raise taxes. For instance, the Alabama gas tax, a lot of people were in favor of that, but you know, what a lot of other states did was if they created a gas tax, they also included a lowering of the state income tax, so that it was offset. But in this case, you know, I think what we need to do is cut government spending to a lot of these left-wing initiatives. I think we need to totally repeal the Green New Deal. Then we'd have funds freed up for true infrastructure projects. But I'm against a federal gas tax. And again, I've signed a pledge that I would never vote to raise your taxes again without some sort of offset in another tax. So maybe, you know, maybe in a world if we drastically cut you know, our income taxes or came up with a better system that resulted in a much lower tax burden, then maybe, you know, you could look at taxes that are more directly related to funding the uses. But the problem with gas taxes too is the fact that the Biden administration is trying to force electric vehicles down everyone's throats. And, you know, again, if you want to buy an electric vehicle, that's great, but it should have to compete on the open marketplace without being subsidized, without regulations forcing you to buy EVs. And you know, EVs get a free pass because you don't pay for gas. So the gas tax goes to pay for infrastructure that EVs are using, but aren't, you know, they aren't paying their fair share. EV owners aren't. So That's another problem I have with gas taxes.
All right. And this one, this is kind of a X's and O's, maybe a pragmatic discussion. I have just about a minute and a half left here. But the AL2, this is a different thing. You know, quite often in Alabama, it's all decided in the primary or primary runoff. But in this case, you've got this, you know, this race in front of you, the runoff in the primary. But then tell me how this district that was drawn to benefit Democrats, to get a second Democrat district in the state, that you can win this.
Look, you know, the mainstream media wanted to tell us that this was without question a Democrat pickup, but the March 5th primary results showed otherwise. There was only 161 vote difference between the turnout for both parties in this district. It's going to take a fighter. It's an uphill battle for Republicans, certainly. You know, I'm the candidate in this race who's a true, strong conservative. I'm not a career politician. The fact that I'm even you know, in this position is indicative of the fact that people are fed up with career politicians, you know, ignoring, you know, the true crises affecting our population. For instance, like my opponent tried to downplay the opioid crisis back in 2017 when at that time Alabama providers were the highest rate in the nation for providing opioid prescriptions. So that people are tired of career politicians with their agendas and want someone who's in their community, talking to them, hearing their concerns. And that's what I've been doing and what I'm committed to doing. And I'm the candidate who will fight and who can defeat the Democrats in November.
All right. More information about your campaign. Where do they go?
Yes. Well, first of all, I wanted to invite anyone who is up and down I-65 tomorrow. We're having a meet and greet at Conecuh Sausage in Evergreen from 11 to 2. We'd love to have you stop by and get a sausage dog. Generally, info can be found at www.dobsonforcongress, D-O-B as in Bravo, S-O-N, for F-O-R, congress.com. We also have Instagram, Facebook, X, and Truth Social accounts, Dobson for Congress.
All right, good stuff. We appreciate your time, and we will hopefully see you and eat some sausage dogs. That'll be good.
Sounds great. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. Caroline Dobson joining us. We're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.